This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is Enterprise Biz Bites, of course. I'm joined in the studio by
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
We have a whole bunch of stories lined up for you today. Five of them, of course. We're starting off with how Organic Valley are going to be going 100% renewable by 2019. That's a very short time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Malaysia's first child tracking kit, something that I know Majida will be fascinated by and will totally be supporting it. I'll then be talking about how artificial intelligence has been detecting suicidal tendencies in people using brain scans. We're coming back to a story about a detachable steering wheel.
Yep.
What year is it? And then wrapping up with a story about how tech giants are filing legal challenges to Trump, the DACA assault over in the US. Let's start off then with Organic Valley.
Yeah, so there's an article here that says that Organic Valley wants to go 100% by 2019, which is literally around the corner because it's already end of 2017, right? So they want to do this through a partnership with the Upper Midwest Municipality Energy Group, and by committing to purchase renewable energy credits from these proposed solar and wind farms near its headquarters, the initiative says that it will enable the development of an additional 29 megawatt solar capacity in Wisconsin. So this is a great story of when you have a commitment, then we can build it, because they're not building something which nobody wants to buy, and the company itself enables the building of this renewable energy. It's worth to note that, however, that the co-op, because Organic Valley is a co-op.
Is it? I didn't realize.
It is a co-op. Yeah, it's a cooperative. It's careful to point out that this does not include, however, its 2,000 or so farmer members who are part of Organic Valley, but rather it is going to be the company's office buildings, a processing facility and distribution center in Cashton, Wisconsin, a creamery in Chaseburg, Wisconsin, and a plant in Oregon that makes butter and dried milk powder. There is additionally some 220 of the farmers that work for Organic Valley. They will install solar in their facility. And this is great because this follows a lot of big companies who have already committed to want to be 100% renewable.
Earlier, I think Mars as well this year.
Yeah, that's right. Mars, and then Lego announced this year that they wanted to go 100% renewable and achieved it 3 years early, which is this year, and are right now pouring $1 billion into making non-plastic alternatives to their Lego bricks. And Google is already offsetting 100% of their electricity needs with renewable energy. So a lot of companies are really going in the right direction with this.
Interesting that Lego have suggested, you know, they're going to go away from the plastic. Of course,
yeah,
as you know, weight by weight, Lego is more valuable than gold.
Genuinely,
right? And so once they've said no more plastic, the price of the original plastic ones, of course, is going to skyrocket. You know, just a little speculative tip there, just to put you in the picture.
It'll be interesting to see what they use to replace plastic.
Right.
The target is 2030. They want to replace all the plastic Lego bricks by 2030, and they've put $1 billion in it.
Wow.
Nice.
Let us know what you think, folks. Get us on Twitter at BFM Radio, of course, and if you want to get in touch via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Story number two is all about Malaysia's first child tracking kit. I remember, well, tried to watch some of the video that was uploaded to The Star earlier on today, which seemed a really odd way of doing things, because they took a video of a video and then uploaded it. You know, it's like you're telling people about new technology, yet you're doing it in the most backwards way possible, right?
Yeah. So I couldn't get much info from that video. I think that video was just about the launch of this this new thing called Track Kit. It's by U-Mobile, and they're working with Knightsbridge Resources. Have you heard of Knightsbridge Resources? I haven't either. So they're working together. They've teamed up to make it easier to keep track of your kids. And I think that video on The Star was pretty much showing the launch of this tracking device. So I had to go look up more information of what this actually is. And it's quite interesting because it says that you don't need wristbands and you don't need any other kit. The tracking device is basically in the SIM card itself.
Already.
So U-Mobile puts it into the SIM card, and then they give it to parents. Of course, parents put it in their kids' phones and mobile devices and stuff. And then once it connects to any kind of GSM device, the parents can track where their kids are. What this is Malaysia's first device like this, a child tracking kit. But what makes it different is that it actually connects to the Community Policing Malaysia automatically. So the moment, like, just say parents track them and then they can't get through, or there's an emergency and then they call them, it immediately pings these guys.
And it's using GSM rather than 3G or anything like that. Okay, smart.
So, so it pings the police immediately, and then they can find out where the phone is from their end, or they can go to the last known place that the phone was detected. So it's pretty straightforward. It's called TrackKid, TRAQKID. It's on all mobile SIM cards. They say it's ready to pre-order starting today, and the subscriptions start at 58 monthly, which it sounds a bit high-ish. And then there's an upfront fee of $36 for personal accident insurance.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I think that's ridiculously expensive for what it is.
For the tracking, I was actually thinking that if I would like all phones to have this kind of thing. It should be like if it was like a mandatory thing that if you buy a SIM card, then all SIM cards come with this kind of a device, since it's installed in the SIM card and it's not like an additional thing outside.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the fact that no other provider has it. So obviously this is a premium service. So now, you know, they're charging for it. So it kind of makes, you know, business-wise.
It's a smart move.
Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, we got to look at stuff like, the GPS-enabled wristbands that we've got for, like, exercising and one thing or another, which are 200 ringgit buyout. Once you've paid your 200 ringgit, you don't have to pay any more money.
Yeah.
You know, and that is... It's not GSM, but it does a very similar thing.
Mm. Yeah, you can still track it, no?
Right,
if you have
right.
like GPS and stuff.
But I think it's a smart idea, genuinely.
Yeah. And I like that they're using GSM, like you said, because then it's easier to track as well. And I like that it's connected automatically to like a policing center. So you don't have to go, like, you call them and make like a separate report and stuff. It's all within the app. So parents just need like the U-Mobile app. They need the TrackKid app as well on their phones. And then they just ping away when they think that something is wrong.
Majida, I know you are big on chipping children.
I want to I want kids to be people to be able to know where their kids are at all time, but not just kids. I want people to know where their husbands are and where everyone is at all time. I think it should be extended to not just children, because there are cases of a lot of missing people and all these other kidnap cases. What to me might feel a little bit off about this is that it is giving a mobile device to a kid, and the kid will need to take care of it and make sure it doesn't get lost or that it's always charged and things like that. I'm sure that besides this this tracker thing, the phone will be able to do other things as well, which leads back to the question of should children be connected this way. And obviously that if the parent can keep track of where the kids are, anyone can keep track of where other people's children are as well. And whether or not that's necessarily a safe thing.
I mean,
interesting thought.
They already are, so I think that the question is, should they be connected? But that's like a question that's kind of, you know, you're asking about something that has already happened, because they are already connected and they all have their phones.
They've already got the phone.
I mean, what I was thinking is, I hope on the parent side, they don't abuse this service, because they should know when to look for their kid and when not to look for their kid. Kids are fine under the age of 10 and, you know, they don't care. But if you start doing this for teenagers, then it becomes a problem. And then teenagers are not going to use this SIM card anymore.
They're just going to turn off the GPS.
They're going to go for a provider that doesn't have like kid tracking devices and stuff. So, I mean, it's important for the parents to know also when to track their kids. If it's not an emergency, then just, you know, they should know boundaries and other
things. You're right. That raises an interesting point. At what age group is this aimed at?
Yeah.
You know, because if a kid is too young, they shouldn't be out by themselves with a mobile phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if they're too old, like you say, if they're teenagers, they're not going to need this service or indeed want this service. So this, the window of people who it's going to be aimed at is quite small, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking maybe it's like, just say like a 9-year-old kid, and he says he's going to have like a sleepover or camp over at a friend's place or something. So parents can kind of keep an eye like where exactly these kids are, whether he's at the friend's place or he's going too far and stuff like that. You do that for teenagers, like a 15-year-old kid, and then you sort of impose, and then it's gonna be a problem. I mean, there are other ways to keep them, you know, in boundaries.
I'm sure a lot of parents will disagree. They will want to know where their 16-year-old daughter is and why she's not coming back at night. They will be more of a reason why they want to know where they are.
Mm. But right. I mean, don't get paranoid about it. Is what I'm saying, you know when to use the tracking device.
Mm.
Okay, join the conversation. We are on Twitter, of course, at BFM Radio. Get us over there, and if you want to WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899. When we come back, we're talking about artificial intelligence, how it's been used to detect suicidal tendencies in people using brain scans. Interesting stuff. Coming up with some music first, though, a little bit of the Traveling Wilburys with "She's My Baby" here on BFM 89.9.
Break from midfield, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. That over there fiddling with a microphone is...
Majida Hashim.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Okay, a little story for you now. It's from a Nature Human Behavior. So recent scientific progress has allowed us to begin decoding the significance of many different patterns of activity in the brain, right? Mm. Researchers have begun to understand patterns associated with disorders such as depression in hopes of correcting it. Other research has zeroed in on how language and speech is signaled in the brain. In one experiment, researchers were even able to convert the MRI readouts of the test subjects' brains into approximate renditions of the movie clips shown to the participants. Now, that's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, new research seeks to use artificial intelligence to identify people suffering from suicidal thoughts based on their brain scans alone. And it's a paper that was published in Nature Human Behavior. Researchers from Carnegie Mellon University looked at 34 participants, half of whom were experiencing suicidal thoughts. Studying these participants all underwent functional magnetic resonance imaging, so that's fMRI, during which they were shown words related to suicide, things like death and distress and, you know, words like that, as well as words related to positive and negative emotions. Now, based on the participants that had already been identified as suicidal, they were able to identify 5 regions of the brain and 6 words that helped to identify those that were suicidal. Based on that information, they were then able to train an algorithm to identify suicidal patients. So of the 34 participants, the algorithm correctly identified 15 of the 17 suicidal patients and 16 of 17 members of the control group. It got it almost entirely accurate. Mm-hmm. Then in a second experiment, they divided the participants with suicidal thoughts into 2 groups. One group that had attempted suicide and one that had not. A separate algorithm was also able to correctly categorize 16 of 17 of those patients. Now, why is this important? For one, it gives us an insight into how the brains of healthy people and suicidal people differ.
Yeah.
In suicidal patients, for example, the word death triggered a reaction in the region of the brain associated with shame. It also may one day provide an additional tool to help diagnose and treat mental health disorders. As we know, psychiatric illnesses are complicated and often not at all that well understood in terms of where they exist in the brain. And that's why, for example, the symptoms for disorders like depression often seem so vague. And a diagnosis of major depressive disorder requires a person to exhibit 5 of 9 symptoms. But 2 people could wind up with the same diagnosis and have almost no symptoms in common, right?
Mm.
Understanding where in the brain those problems are occurring could one day lead to more effective means of treating them. Fascinating paper.
Mm.
You know, and the very fact that we speak about this all the time, about how scary and accurate AI has become.
Yeah.
The very fact that you can feed it this kind of information just using words and a little bit of an fMRI, and it go, this person is very likely to have suicidal thoughts and it's somebody you should look at and you know, treat.
Mm.
Right?
And it also tells you how things like suicide is an actual mental disorder.
Like it's
a sickness and an illness.
Yeah.
If you can track it from scans of the brain,
then you can treat it.
Yeah, it means that it's a physical thing. It's not like something that someone can just get over tomorrow
right.
and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, which is interesting. And it also shows you how they can use these things. Like, we always talk about like AI and robots taking over and, you know, like becoming smarter and like becoming better than humans. Mm. But these are like the good things that AI can be used for. They're mostly good things that AI can be used for.
Mm.
And these are like the more beneficial things, like using it to track people and to sort of predict and preempt what someone's going to do and stop them from doing it or getting them the help that they need. And it also helps people from having to, verbalize their thoughts. And some people aren't able to write it down. Mm. They're unable to tell you what they're going through. And they might feel they're okay. A lot of people who I forgot what book it was that I read, where it said that even they don't know they're suicidal.
Right.
Mm.
Because it's something that's in them. It's an illness and they don't know that they're ill until it comes to a breaking point, and then they do something and it's too late.
And right. They just snap out of it.
They
right?
snap.
Yeah.
So if you have something like this, like actual data to tell you and to tell them that this is what it is and this is what it shows, and maybe you need to come to terms with it that you're not well and you need to get help, maybe a lot more people could get help in the process.
It's the other point of view as well, that a lot of people who, the shame part that you were saying, Richard, that people feel that they are ashamed that they are feeling this way, and this one helps to tell people that it's actually okay.
Because your brain is doing it naturally.
It's something that's happening in your brain. It's not just you. So a lot of people who have this kind of depression or feeling suicidal, they'll tell people that, oh, I'm actually fine, and they're smiling and they're saying okay, but actually they are not. They don't say how they feel because they feel ashamed. This one will tell you that it's actually is something very real. You're not just feeling down. You're not just feeling throwing a tantrum. You're not simply just calling attention to yourself or an attention seeker. That really is something happening in your brain that makes you feel this way, and it can be treated.
Yeah, because you always, like, people point their finger at the person who's suicidal and blame them for being suicidal.
Yeah. Right?
But you don't blame someone for having a fever. You don't go like, oh, it's your fault that you have a flu. You catch a virus or something and you get a cold or a flu. It's the same thing for suicide and depression and stuff. They're just unwell.
Yeah, you can't tell them that, oh, just snap out of it. They can't.
They can't. It's an actual sickness. And I think that's the whole stigma why they sort of blame people for being like, oh, why are you so down? Why are you so, like, mopey? And, you know, you should watch comedies and stuff. It's not as simple as people think. And it'll be much easier for people who have these problems to have, like, solid data to show other people and go, this is an actual problem.
Right. I mean, you know, therapy is a great way of dealing with stuff like that. And, you know, and that can help the psychiatrist or the psychologist or whatever come to a crossroads where they think maybe this person is suffering from depression, maybe we should do something about it. But like you say, this hard data, you know, once they've gotten to that crossroads and they're like, right, okay, how do we treat this? And is it an illness or is this something else?
Yeah.
Doing something like this is an absolute, I mean, it's almost 99% accurate.
Yeah. It's also a great way to say if a treatment is working or not, because there are a lot of different ways that affect different people. A treatment may work for one person, may not work for another person. And having these scans, and it also shows which treatment is working or suits that person himself.
I mean, like, it's like having an x-ray, right? You go and you're able to monitor by taking, like, a series of x-rays. With mental illness, you don't have those x-rays. It's very vague and, like, you know, it depends on the person. So yeah, this is it's like a huge step in the right direction.
All right. Good chat. Really interesting discussion. Let us know what you think, folks. Get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. When we come back, we're moving on to would you carry a steering wheel with you like you would with your mobile phone? I think we already know the answer to that, but hold your horses. We're going to take a very short break. Music coming up from Howlin' Wolf. It is Spoonful. Don't go anywhere here on BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj
and Majida Hashim.
So Arvind is going to tell us a story now about a steering wheel that you carry around with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's literally a steering wheel that you can take into your house.
All right.
From your car and take into the house. But it's not. This is actually part of Jaguar's.
Hang on, Majida. I'm really looking forward to this. Let's sit down and get comfortable.
Okay. Yeah. So this is part of Jaguar's vision for fully self-driving car. It's actually built. It's their vision for 23 years into the future. So it's like 2040-ish, something like that. They envision that you will have a steering wheel that will also be like a virtual assistant. They've named it Sayer after Malcolm Sayer, who designed Jaguar's iconic 1968 model.
The E-Type.
Yeah, the E-Type. So it's called Sayer. It's like Siri or Alexa. It has a voice. It has a weird sense of humor.
It's Kit.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. So you use it in the car, and then you just you pluck it out and then you carry it and into the house. It weighs about 2 pounds and then it's nicely designed. It's rectangular shape, so it doesn't look like a round steering wheel because that would be weird. You take this rectangular thing, you put it anywhere you want in the house. It's like a decorative item. It's like your iPhone.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. We're talking about using a steering wheel as a decorative item.
If you look at the way it's designed, then it looks nice. It looks sleek and it looks trendy and stuff.
I'll give you that.
It doesn't look like one
of
those.
But it's a steering wheel.
It doesn't have have a honk in the middle and stuff. you don't have to put like a honk on your showcase and stuff. But what they wanted to do is they are saying that it's probably the only piece of the car that you will own in the future. You won't actually own the Jaguar itself. The Jaguar will be part of its fleet of shared cars. Mm. So every car in the future will be like part of a ride hailing service.
I see.
Yeah, and the only part of the car that you buy and you own would be
the wheel.
The wheel. It's not even a wheel at this point. It's a rectangular device called Sayer. Calling it a wheel would be its traditional way, but we'll come back to that a bit later. Yeah, so it says that once you put it in your house, it'll be able to check if your fridge has enough milk. It'll be able to help you with everything else, like if a light bulb is fused, it'll call the electrician. It'll be able to connect to all the other devices in your house.
Okay.
And then the next day when you need your ride...
I'm cracking up at the idea of like a steering wheel saying, hey, you need more milk, dude.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. And then it starts turning.
Your light bulb is blown.
Right.
Yeah. And then it honks that it gets to get your attention. No, so when the next day when it needs your car to pull up, then it summons your car on time, depending on how fast you're getting ready, because it knows exactly how where you are in your schedule, and then it gets your ride for you. So it connects to one of Jaguar's type cars. So they're calling it, their new Jaguar Land Rover Future Type.
All right.
Yeah, TYPE, all in capitals.
So, honestly then, couldn't we just do this with a phone?
You could. So that's what they're saying. The argument is that this would be part of something that people are calling, I think it's called skeuomorphism. Skeuomorphism. So where you use something from the past and then you sort of implement a function in it when it doesn't have to be in that shape or form.
Right.
So like using a wheel, like a steering wheel, as a device and then connecting it to a car when it doesn't have to be a wheel at all. Because if you're not using it to drive, then why does it have to be a steering wheel?
Mm.
It can just be as small as your iPhone, or it can be any other device that you just take out of your car, like a key.
Mm.
But skeuomorphism is where you want to use something that is familiar to people so they feel like it is a steering wheel when you're connected to your car, and then but it has functions that has nothing to do with the steering wheel.
I got you. This is a strange way of designers, you know, trying to convince us of looking at something differently, right?
Differently, yeah. But it uses the same mechanism, or it uses the same name, but it has completely different functions.
Different functions.
Yeah, it's like how the new smartwatches use they use like a round face.
Yeah, the analog face, right?
Yeah, the analog face. But you don't have to, because they are smartwatches and they're completely digital, so you don't have to use the analog face at all. But people are more familiar with that kind of design, so they associate it with being a watch.
I mean, I remember not too long ago, for those of you that have got an iPhone and use the podcast app on it, not too long ago it looked like a mini tape player, you know, and that is skeuomorphism Apple terms. And for me, that was nice and familiar, and I enjoyed looking at the animation, and I don't know, it sounds ridiculous, but it made it feel almost as though you could see the tape passing, and then you knew how much longer you'd got of the podcast left and one thing or another. And it just made me feel comfortable. And now that it's moved to this whole, it's literally digital and all you see is digits moving up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know we're in that space now and I know we've got to move forward. But I don't know. I kind of like the idea of skeuomorphism when it's done right.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many designers now moving away from that idea. And now it just seems weird that Jaguar have now decided to bring it back again in the future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's kind of what Elon Musk was saying, because he's saying that steering wheels will be a thing of the past.
Right.
Once cars go fully autonomous, people won't need steering wheels.
Mm. Yeah.
And once they're fully autonomous, you will have other ways of controlling the car if you want to control it.
Mm.
You might have a joystick. You might have like buttons. There'll be a bunch of ways for you to make the car move manually other than a steering wheel, because the whole car will be designed differently where you won't need a wheel at all.
Right.
Jaguar is saying that it just gives people the option to use the wheel if they want to. So it's designed in a way where you can still hold on to it. It feels like a video game controller. So if you want to drive the car, you don't want the car to do the driving for you, then you can take control of the wheel. That's why they're implementing it there. It makes it feel like the person has more control of the car than just using a keyboard or like a bunch of buttons.
All right.
Mm. Yeah.
The thing is that this one over here, it says that it targets the year 2040.
Yeah.
And the thing is this, even if you're going through skeuomorphism, by the year 2040, the phones that we have now, this will be what's retro back when it's 2040. True. So why don't you use what's already we have now, get used to it, and then push it into 2040? Because I don't see us actually in a self-driving car mode, actually holding on to the wheel and actually using it, because I don't think it connects to anything. But I see maybe like a jack or a console where you put your phone into it, and then it connects the phone to your car already and tells you where you need to go. And that phone can already tell you, in your house, already tell you like your light bulb's broken or control the lighting.
We can do that now. You know, Google Home does that.
Yeah, Alexa does that already.
It's literally portable. You put your phone wherever it is. You put it in your car. A, you need to top up your petrol. And you put it in your house, you need to top up your milk.
Yeah.
So it's basically taking Alexa and asking Alexa to drive the car for you.
It is, but I'm thinking that maybe Jaguar did this because they looked at how the like trends work. So they didn't say 10 years from now. They specifically said 23 years from now, 2040. So if you look at it now, so now the 80s have come back. And even with phones, they used to be giant phones and then it went very small. Like we had tiny screens and that was the new thing. And now we're going bigger again.
Yeah.
I think Oppo just released like a 6-inch screen yesterday and it's supposed to be like the new big thing.
Yeah.
So I think if they studied that trend, maybe they saw that steering wheels would take a dip somewhere in the middle. People would experiment with autonomous cars and then they would find that they needed steering wheels again. Maybe. I don't know. I'm willing to give them the, you know.
That's a good thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're looking at a future where steering wheels disappear and then people say, no, I think we need that technology back again. Which is weird. There's another thing, because last week during the Web and Travel conference, one big panel was about autonomous cars. And this was exactly what the person spoke about. Bobby Healy, his name was. So he said that cars won't be just vehicles on the road anymore, that we'll use them as personal assistants. So you will have a car, it'll come pick you up when you want to go to work, it'll drop you at work, and then it will go around to like its shared pod or whatever, and then it'll go pick up your kids according to schedule because it'll be connected to your kids' devices. And then once it does that, it will calculate traffic. And because everyone will be on the network, so there won't be traffic jams. And then it'll come and pick you up from work depending on your schedule as well. Because you'll have a schedule on your phone and it will know when you finished your meetings. So it'll come and pick you up exactly when it needs to.
That sounds like a utopia almost.
I think this article plays on the nostalgia factor that we are going to miss the steering wheel of all things when self-driving car comes along. And already right now, a lot of retro stuff, and we're talking just now about Lego bricks.
Right.
And one day when there's no longer plastic Lego bricks, we're going to hold on to this because that's what we're... We're going to hold on to steering wheels sometime in the future and say and tell our future kids that, you know, in my day, this is what we used to drive our cars. Of which case, then I actually want the round steering wheel, the ones that I used to drive my car now, and say that that's where I used to control my car back in my day.
Okay, we need to take a break. We've got some music coming up in a second from Jimi Hendrix with Fire. But just to quickly mention that somebody mentioned, when we started off the show a little bit earlier on, second story was about chipping kids and one thing or another. Somebody whose telephone number ends 8120 has said, just use Friend Finder on your iPhone. I mean, that's fine, but that relies on GPS and 3G
data.
And one thing
and,
or another.
And don't you need, the other person needs to opt in on Friend Finder,
correct.
Right?
But I mean, if you're doing it for your kids, you know, you'd opt in on their behalf, wouldn't you?
So these things already exist. Yeah.
Well, kind of. Right. Short break. Music. It is Jimi Hendrix with Fire. We'll be right back in a few minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Our final story of the day before we wrap up is about tech giants are filing legal challenges to Trump's DACA assault.
Yeah, so Google, Microsoft, Facebook are among the more than 100 tech companies that are banding together to mount legal action against President Donald Trump in an effort to end the DACA. So the companies filed a brief on Wednesday to support the deterred action for childhood arrival, or DACA, which offers protection to undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. when they were children. These people are often referred to as the Dreamers. The Trump administration said in September that it would end the Obama-era program, which lets immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children before 2007 to stay without fear of deportation. Earlier this year, in September, Apple, Amazon, Google, Uber, Airbnb and about 300 other tech companies signed a group letter addressed to Trump urging him to reconsider the move. He has not, so now over 100 of them are now banding together to take legal challenge on this. Apple itself has filed its own brief opposing the move, saying that the company employs more than 250 Dreamers in 28 states. Apple's VP of People says that these employees are important contributors to Apple's unique culture, and that culture enables employees throughout Apple to do the best work of their lives and excel in creating the most innovative products and providing the best customer service. Mm. It's the diversity that these tech companies have within their company that makes them who they are.
Right.
Yeah. And so and that's why they are banding together, because of the diversity that forwards innovation in this in these tech companies.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
He came forward in March, and the order was buy American, hire American. That was his executive order. And he wanted the reforms to the H-1B visa system, which is what a lot of the Silicon Valley companies use to get people, you know, on board, often foreign workers. You know, so there's the discussion as to whether or not they've kind of manipulated the system somewhat to get some of these workers there.
Yeah. So the problem with right now the current immigration visa, especially where these Dreamers are concerned, is that it's not as simple as it seems. When applying for this visa, they have to leave the country because they are here illegally, although they were here part of the DACA. If you remove that, then they will be here illegally. But if they're here less than 6 months, it would trigger a 3-year ban from re-entering the US. If they're here for more than a year, like most of them are, it will trigger a 10-year ban from re-entering the US. And the thing is this, tech companies are comprised of people from different cultures, and that's what makes it interesting. We've always talked about how in a monoculture, everybody thinks the same way. But when you bring in people from different parts of the countries and different ways of thinking, different linguistic skills, and different ways of perceiving the world, that's where innovation happens.
Agreed.
Google CEO is an immigrant from India. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella moved from to the US from India 3 years ago. Uber CEO is an Iranian immigrant. Former PayPal CTO and co-founder Max Levchin was born in the Ukraine. So US is actually one of those things that they say people who pursued American dream go to.
Yeah, and America was supposed to be the bastion of all of that. You know,
it's
the country made up of immigrants.
Yeah. The study by the Center of American Progress estimated that the loss of all the DACA workers would reduce U.S. GDP by $433 billion over the next 10 years. So there is an economic impact onto that
as
well.
Huge economic impact. Yeah. Okay, we got to wrap up.
Yep, there's one tiny little thing. If you want to hear stories of actual people who are going through problems because of this DACA thing, go to Humans of New York. I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago they had like actual stories of people who are suffering because of this. It helps to put faces on this whole thing, because it's actual personal stories, and it's not just about people in tech companies without names and stuff.
Yeah.
It gives
right.
you like a clearer picture of what this means for so many people in the US.
Alright. Okay, let's quickly run through the stories that we covered today. We started off with
Organic Valley and how they're going 100% renewable by 2019, and it follows behind the steps of a lot of our companies who want to go the same way.
Then we also spoke about TrackKid. It's Malaysia's first child tracking device by U-Mobile, and you can get it at TrackKid. That's TRAQKID.my.
I then spoke about how an AI algorithm has been successful in helping to predict people who have suicidal tendencies. And then we moved on to
Jaguar's plans for a detachable steering wheel, which will also be your home assistant and basically your companion in life.
And an antique in your living room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then we spoke about how tech giants like Google, Microsoft and Facebook have filed legal action against Trump's DACA assault.
That's all we have time for today then. But before we go, of course, coming up after the 1 o'clock news is the Breakfast Grill replay. It is with Jason Portnoy, managing partner of Oak House Partners. And interestingly enough, he was part of PayPal's pioneering team early on in his career, and having helped the company go through its hypergrowth and subsequent $1.5 billion acquisition, he's got a bit of an illustrious track record. It's seen him dip his hands in various funds whose early investments included Facebook and Palantir Technologies. The Breakfast Grill spoke with him on Oak House Partners, his latest VC firm, to discuss the opportunities and challenges that the Asian landscape presents. On behalf of Majid Hashim and Arvind Yuvaraj, I'm Richard Bradbury. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, here on Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.